Welcome in. It is RJ Bell's Dream Preview College Basketball Edition. I'm AJ Hoffman. He's Griffin Warner at the real underscore G Warner on your socials. And this is, friends, the final episode of the regular season. What a season it has been. I think Griffin and I want to say we're number one and number two in college basketball at pregame this season. So that makes me feel good. And at the time of recording, we are up for the season over a combined 100 units. So that, friends, is how it's done. What a season for the pod. Somehow went a bunch of one and ones over on this pod all season, but we're going to finish up on the pod too. We got things right at the right time, and here we are into the most wonderful time of the year, at least partly into it, when conference tournaments start up. But we are going to go through four games that are still not conference tournament games. They're still playing it out in the big boy conferences, so we'll see how those seasons wrap up for some of the big boy teams. And then we'll do some best bets, and my best bet, here's a tease, is from a conference tournament. So we've got a little bit of that. This is what we call the transition period. We're turning into a postseason college basketball program. Let's get it started, though. So far, 1-0 on our best bets from Sunday's show. As we record this Thursday evening, my best bet is still yet to tip off. UC San Diego against UC Davis. I actually projected that line would be 9, and I was going to like UC Davis or UC San Diego minus 9. Turns out like 6.5, pretty much wherever you want it. So the market's kind of given me the finger a couple times recently. Gave me the finger earlier today with Texas State against Southern Miss. I played Texas State at a pick'em and woke up and it was Texas State plus 3. And I was like, oh, that's really unfortunate, but it didn't matter. Texas State dominated anyway. And the people who bet on Southern Miss learned the hard way, something I've learned before: don't trust Andre Curbelo.
I thought you were going to say they learned the hard way of fading the AJ Hoffabees Hoffman. I thought that's what you're going with.
No, I mean, it's going to work sometimes. It's going to work at least 45% of the time. All right, let's get into the big games this week. And a couple of these games on paper are big games, but on the point spread, they're not going to be tight point spreads. So we're going to have to give a little thought here. It's not as simple as two equal teams, home team minus 3, let's go. These first two, I think, are particularly challenging lines, but we're going to start with Tennessee, who just clinched the SEC regular season, and we're going to project them a 9-point favorite at home against Kentucky. And I actually won money on both of these teams yesterday. Tennessee getting the job done really without much doubt, and in a game where I thought maybe it would be a sleepy spot for them against South Carolina on the road. It was not. And then Kentucky ends up running away from Vanderbilt late after struggling early, but they blew them out at the end of the day. So both of these teams coming in with some momentum. I think a pretty big rivalry game by SEC standards. So I've said this a couple times on the pod. I'm finding myself being sucked back into the Rick Barnes vortex where he's tricking me. I always love these Tennessee teams defensively, and I'm like, that'll be enough to get them over the hump. They don't need that good of an offense. But now the offense is there. This team is – they seem to me to be legit. I think barring some sort of late season meltdown disaster, they're going to be a one seed. I know they want to win this game. I know they want to finish the season strong. And if it were any team other than Kentucky, I think I might be looking to fade Tennessee here, having already locked up the regular season title. But I don't know that I want to do that right now with this team against a Kentucky team that is also playing pretty good ball. They've got guard play out the wazoo. The question is, will those guards be able to have success against this Tennessee defense? Griffin, I'll let you have the floor here. You tell me, is Tennessee in a spot where they can cover this big of a number?
I think they always are at home. Really, number doesn't matter. They can cover any sort of price against any sort of team. But I am, as you say, a plus nine type of number. That does give lots of room for Kentucky to hang around and ultimately lose the foul game towards the end. But most teams don't foul beyond 9 points. So that would tempt me a fair amount. I think 8.5 would be only a half a point difference, but significantly different in the eyes of a better, or at least someone who might be trying to take those points on the road. Tennessee, as you mentioned, I think they have a lot to play for still. At least I'm sure Rick Barnes is saying that as loud as he can in the locker room, banging chairs together, whatever it would take to try to make sure this is not a spot that Tennessee has celebrated after they have clinched an outright SEC title. And I think there's the rivalry factor helps there. Plus, Kentucky is also in a position where they are still the number one name brand, I think, across college basketball, maybe besides Duke. I hate to say it because I don't really prefer either of those teams or like either of them. But I think Kentucky has really established themselves as the IT program. And I think Tennessee and their players probably felt like they wished they were recruited or wanted to go to Kentucky. Cause I mean, most of these names aren't huge names. Dalton Connect transfer from Northern Colorado. Like, I mean, Santiago Vescovi is basically like a pull from Uruguay when they're panicked because Tennessee had lost a bunch of guards to injury, I think mid season back when you could do that, when it wasn't just a Kansas only type of thing. So there's, I think, some need also for Tennessee to make sure they clinch a one seed. Cause they've been, I think, jockeying back and forth with the Arizonas of the world based on a lot of the brackets that are out there, whether they're actually intelligent bracket makers or not. But it does seem like they are not anywhere near a guaranteed one seed. So I expect a pretty good effort here from Tennessee. I think that's what makes this sport so great, is that there is no tanking. There is no giving up on a season. There is every game matters, every chance to build your resume in the positive direction, I think, really pushes forward a really good performance. Whereas if you're 8-3 with your last game of the season, does that really matter so much in college football, for example? I'm not really so sure. So I think Tennessee is fully focused. I think this will be a tough environment for Kentucky to go into, as Tennessee, any game in Knoxville always is. But I think Kentucky goes in and they utilize a guard, I think, advantage, because their talented backcourt is such. We were talking, I think, offline after the South Carolina game, or at least off air. And I'm really warming up to Zakai Ziegler, I think, being the best player on this Tennessee team, even though Dalton Connect gets all the press, all the pub, all the points as well. I think Zakai Ziegler is the most important player. And I backed Kentucky at home against Tennessee when these teams first met up. And it just seemed to me that Tennessee made a ton of shots. That's certainly more likely to happen at home. And I think is one of those scenarios where it also already happened once against a pretty porous Kentucky defense. It could happen again. But I think if you give me nine, I think I'm more interested in the Kentucky side. It's a bit bigger than I was expecting. And I do feel like Kentucky, one thing they've added, I think, through a lot of this season is they're really good at protecting the rim with Onyenso and Bradshaw inside. So if they are able to force Tennessee into perimeter shots, of course, if they go in, that's a problem. But I like the idea of having some better defenders that can be put on Dalton Connect. South Carolina didn't have an answer for that, despite winning in Knoxville themselves. So I think if you give me nine, I'll be interested in Kentucky.
Yeah, I think at nine, I'm just going to pass because I'm not looking to play the road dog here, kind of for the reasons that you said at the beginning. Tennessee, if they want to, they can put away anybody at home. I think this crowd is going to be insane. And I just don't have enough faith that Tennessee will have an off night in their building to feel like I'm comfortable. Even maybe if I saw double digits, I don't believe we will see double digits, but I just don't have enough faith in it. And especially because Kentucky now, which is wild to think, to say that Kentucky is now reliant on shot making, like 3-point shot making, which is something that hasn't been the case in a long, long time for Kentucky teams. But Dillingham and Antonio Reeves, and obviously Reed Shepard, who's, you know, amongst the best 3-point shooters in the world,
doesn't miss
again. Yeah, on the road. Yeah. Do we trust it as much? It didn't work against LSU on the road. I know that. They didn't show up against Texas A&M earlier in the season on the road. South Carolina, I think they've got some ugly road losses, although they did go win at Auburn. So it's certainly possible. It's not like not in their repertoire to go get a big home win. They've done it, but or a big road win. But this, I think, is just a it's too far of a reach for me to want to fade Tennessee here. And I think what you said, like there's no guarantee that they're a one seed. That's not locked up by any stretch. And you mentioned Arizona. I think also remember North Carolina's in that conversation, who we'll get to here next. And North Carolina has a head-to-head win over Tennessee. So Tennessee probably realizes they've still got to do some work to guarantee they're on that one line. Although I don't know how different a one and two line is in a season like this, where it seems like, you know, there's 8 or 10 teams that have a chance and then the rest don't. But yeah, I would say it's Tennessee or pass for me if the number is indeed 9.
Just to finish off, like going through Kentucky's results this year, like there's no method or madness on why they win games. Like I swear, I've been trying to pinpoint it. Like, oh, if they shoot well, maybe that's what it is. But I mean, man, like their win at Auburn, 4 for 13 from three, that's not very good. Win at Florida, 5 for 20. So it's not just 3-point shooting. I wish I could explain it or understand it. I think this is one of those, even if we don't play, I think this is one of these watch and learn, see how Kentucky does, because I feel like they have the horses to compete with Tennessee. If they can't do it and it doesn't happen twice, maybe that means this is just a bad matchup for them. I'm not sure. I think they are one of those teams that I have no idea what to do with in my bracket. I don't really know that I'll know in 10 days.
And the other thing about Tennessee is they can win whatever kind of game you throw at them. So, I mean, obviously, I think we can look at the last couple of weeks as just an example. They just beat South Carolina in a 66-59 game. Just a little while ago, they beat Auburn 92-84. Like, if you want to play a bunch of possessions, okay. I mean, they're just killing teams in transition. If you want to play a slow, grimy defensive game, you're going into Rick Barnes' wheelhouse. I assume that Kentucky is going to try to push their pace on Tennessee. I think Tennessee will be willing to accept that. And then it boils down to who's going to get stops. And in my mind, Tennessee is the team that's going to get stops here. I don't think Kentucky's a very good defensive team. So Tennessee's elite defensively. So I've got one team who I think is going to get a bunch of scoring opportunities and one team that I think is going to, have to go up against a tougher defense. That's the team I'm going to lean towards. So give me the Vols if I end up playing this game. All right, let's talk about North Carolina. As I mentioned, they are in the conversation for a one seed, but it's going to take probably a win at Duke to get that job done. And we're going to project Duke as a 5-point favorite at home against North Carolina. North Carolina won the first matchup 93-84. It feels like Duke is maybe rounding into form. I don't know if you feel that same way, with the exception of that one loss at Wake Forest that was like a nail biter. It feels like they've really kind of turned things around. But then I started digging in. It's like, well, who are they playing? And it makes you realize the ACC is not very good. So it's kind of hard to gauge. Like, I do think North Carolina and Duke are good, but it's hard to gauge how good they really are, because I don't even know who the third best team in the ACC is. I don't know who we should be looking at and going, oh yeah, that's the measuring stick of how good these teams are. So I had to like go back and dig through non-conference stuff, but then it's like, that was so long ago. It's hard to tell how these teams are playing now. Like, does blowing out Virginia at home tell me anything? I don't think so. Like, we thought Miami was going to be good. They're not even a tournament team. They were in the Final Four last year. They're not a tournament team. I don't know if Wake Forest is a tournament team, thanks to some shoddy ACC officiating on Tuesday. So, again, it's really Duke and North Carolina and then a bunch of just plebes. So when I say Duke's playing well coming into this game, I mean, so is North Carolina, because they haven't played Duke. So it's like, it's just, it's hard to know what you're going to get out of these teams. I really dug into that first matchup, and it boiled down to, I mean, North Carolina shot the ball much better than Duke, but they also got to the free throw line. 25 free throw attempts, 18 of 25 from the line for North Carolina, 9 of 11 for Duke. And that's, we talk about it often, that's the home whistle. But the other thing was, North Carolina took really good care of the basketball. 5 turnovers for the entire game. Duke had 11, which is still a pretty decent number. But when your opponent only turns it over 5 times, like, you better dominate on the glass. And they played about even on the glass. So I was impressed with North Carolina, but I don't think they're going to get that same whistle here. If anything, I will probably be on the Blue Devils. I just think that right now, the way they're playing, I trust them a little bit more. And obviously, on the home court, I mean, it's hard to fade home court this season to begin with. And Duke, I guess you go back to the really weird loss at home to Pitt, which was, I guess it was 2 months ago now or something like that. But since then, they've just done nothing but handle business at home. I mentioned blowing Virginia out of the water. They beat Wake Forest at home, which I guess they're in the Wake Forest and Clemson, maybe the other respectable teams in the ACC. I don't know.
Who knows?
But at home, I just feel like I trust them more. So Duke would be the only side I'd look to here. What about you?
Yeah, I think it feels like five might be a little bit high, I gotta say, based on what the line we saw the first time. I feel like is in a little bit of that range, and I feel like UNC has maybe got a little bit more apple of the eye of the college basketball market at this point. But I mean, the ACC, to me, I've been looking and really hoping that the NCAA tournament would get here as soon as possible with gaudy records for both these schools, because I just don't think they've been challenged at all. I don't really know if there's like who is going to represent the ACC in this tournament. Like, I guess Clemson's got a bid. That big win at Alabama is huge. But like, as you mentioned, Miami's fallen off a cliff. Virginia Tech, we've LOL. Syracuse has been got a good win against North Carolina. That's about it. There's been a lot of questions about them and the conference in general. I think I'm a little bit curious about your thoughts on how healthy we think Kyle Filipowski has been, because ever since he got court stormed or whatever, and everyone talked about that for years and years and years and said, if you have a court storm, you lose a home game next year or something like that to all fix it. But he hasn't played a lot of minutes since that injury, 29 against Louisville, 29 against Virginia, 22 against NC State. I guess they all weren't very close, so maybe that's just trying to keep him as ready as possible. We'll see. But even then, I think looking at that first game, as you mentioned, the 6.6% turnover rate, incredible, probably like elite top 1% or something like that, if that happens throughout a season. Not a lot of turnovers in this game. I think Duke usually actually forces more than UNC, but UNC is a really low turnover team as well. And I think there's some problems with the UNC defense in general. It's been looked at as like this really good unit, but Duke shot 60% inside in that first game. So I expect the three-point shooting to improve for Duke at home at Cameron Indoor. As you mentioned, the whistle should switch sides and start being 8-on-5 for the home team, in this case being the Blue Devils. So I think that all works in that direction. I'm just hoping that there's a little bit more love for UNC and this number opens in a 3, maybe 4 range. It's probably a little bit a begging rather than expecting, because ultimately I think Duke gets a lot more respect in this rivalry going back years and years and years. So yeah, we'll see what happens, but I think I'm with you. Duke home team is what I'd want in this one on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm not sure about Filipowski's health. I know he played really well when he was on the floor against Virginia. He certainly looked healthy. He dominated that game when he was out there. I just think it was a matter of they didn't need him. They said, let's reserve minutes. But the Louisville game, I know he was in foul trouble almost from the beginning. So those are good reasons.
And if he's playing, maybe that's enough, you know, because if he was not playing or if it was a concern, they'd probably be resting him, as a lot of these other teams are doing with the Colics and the Iguodaros of the world, right? Like Marquette's doing, right?
Yeah, I think they know that they need that guy come tournament time. So, but I imagine if they're gonna grind him out here, it'd be in this game. Obviously, yep. It doesn't matter what the standings are. Yeah, you know, there's gonna be a dogfight here to win this game. And go back real quick to what you said about the ACC. I think Clemson is in. I see them projected as like a 5 or a 6 seed, so they're probably safe no matter what happens. The one that I don't understand, Virginia is just like assumed to be in the tournament. How is this a thing? Like, Virginia's not good at all. I don't understand it. I get 12-7 in conference. And at some point, I guess you have enough wins. They say, okay, yeah, you're good enough because you're in the ACC. The eye test to me, I mean, this is a bad basketball team. I don't know how they're winning games when they do win them. I don't think anything of this team, but it seems like everybody wants to put them in the tournament. This is a first round fade for me. I don't care who they play. Like, I think this is a bullshit tournament team. Like, I think they're going to get in because the ACC is going to get enough respect, and Tony Bennett's name is good enough for them to throw them in the tournament. But I don't think this is a real team at all.
Yeah, I can't really find a way to disagree. I've had some really bad experiences betting Virginia, lost by a million against Wisconsin in one of those tournaments early season, made 1 out of 11 free throws against Wake Forest down the stretch. I'm not a fan of them in general. I think the best bet I ever made in my life was 125-1 Texas Tech with Chris Beard to win the title, that they gave up a 3 to go to overtime. And that was, of course, against Virginia after they, I think also I bet against them with Purdue the game before that, or at least in that tournament run with the incredible like save from Kihei Clark. I'm very happy he's not on the team anymore. But I'm looking forward to getting some revenge against Virginia. So I hope you're right.
All right, let's go to the Big 12. And the Houston Cougars, we're going to project them at home against Kansas. Boy, I can't believe I'm going to say this number. A 10-point favorite, I think, is not out of the realm of possibility here. And Houston has been just a juggernaut at home. I mean, they are tough. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and bring this down to 9. As good as they've been at home, I just can't do it. And here's why. I wasn't sure if Kevin McCullough was going to come back ever, like before the tournament started. But having him back, I think, is a big deal. And I mean, you have to factor in the 6 or so games into Kansas's metrics that they were without him. And I think everybody knew that they just weren't going to be very good without him. And they did get that Baylor win with him gone, which was nice, but. For the most part, we know that this team is not, they're not, it's certainly not in any kind of championship discussion unless Hunter Dickinson and Kevin McCullough are both playing at full strength. Now with him back, though, maybe there's a little bit of a value on Kansas here. I am not a masochist, so I'm not going to fade Houston at home. I think that's a fool's errand. If I do play Houston, it'll be what I've done with almost every Houston game this season, and as great of a season as I'm having at pregame.com, where I'm up over 80 units right now, I'm going to give you a little secret, a little recipe to how I got to that 80 units. I play Houston first halves at home, and what they do at home is just clamp you down and let you have nothing. And if this number is 5 at home in the first half, I'll be on Houston first half again, because it's just, I don't know if it's lost all year. I'm not joking. I think it may be undefeated this season. So I won't fade them for the full game. But I think I could see Kansas hanging around late. I could see them making a run late and hanging within this number if it really is 9 or 10. That just feels like such an absurd number for a Kansas team that's got some pride. You know, Bill Self's like, this is the worst. That's wild. This is the worst season, I think, maybe ever under Bill Self, and they are 22-8, and you know, probably going to be what, like a 4 seed. That's the worst they've ever been under Bill Self. I think things are going okay. I think Houston wins. I just think that 9 or 10 is it's going to be a pretty big number, man.
Yeah, so I've been literally waiting to go to the Fog as long as possible to figure out when I thought Texas had the best chance to beat KU. Went this year because it was the last time we'll probably ever play there, the University of Texas, that is, as I'm an alum. And while we lost by 19, it was never close after the 11. We had back-to-back TV timeouts at the 11:34 and 11:24 or something like that. For some reason, we missed the initial TV timeout early. Never close after that. But this is, as you mentioned, I think the most losses Bill Self has ever had in conference play. Yes, they're playing more games now than they have in the past, but that's saying something. Hadn't lost 7 games in conference in his entire like coaching career at KU, which goes back eons, which is amazing. But they're under the like against the spread this year, 13-17, 3-5 their last 8. So things haven't been great. I was going to say that KU rarely loses by big margins. They're usually a great underdog away from home, at least in the years previous. But I mean, lost by 8 on Saturday to Baylor, lost by 8 at home to BYU the game before that, lost by 29 at Texas Tech. So like, it's not unheard of for them to lose by a lot of points. They did get a very close cover by a half of a point in a 4-point road loss at Iowa State. So I think I'm most interested in, I mean, I love hearing, I mean, very, very nice of AJ, because we had one like delayed podcast that came out, gave out your whole card. Now you're like letting the people, I think once you get over 80 units on pregame, I think AJ becomes a lot more giving of his information, it seems. But credit you for that, finding something and riding it, because seems like I would think Houston would be better in the full game than the first half, because they would really wear you down with their physicality. But I guess if you found something, why if it ain't broke, don't fix it, as they say. I think KU, we've talked about it all year. Their depth is a big problem. I'm not really sure. Kevin McCullough looked pretty good, I'll say, against Baylor, but I'm not sure he's anywhere near the strength that he needs to be to beat this Houston team on the road. And if you're not beating Houston away, then you're going to try to find a way to cover and hang around for that whole game. At nine, it's like I said, with the fouling region, it feels really comfortable to back Kansas there. I've learned the hard way fading Houston, I think, with Texas Tech early this year, and that was felt pretty close, and I think they're still down 20. So I think I will stay far away from any sort of Kansas lean, and I guess Houston first half sounds pretty good.
Yeah, we saw, I think the recipe is, we kind of talked about it with the BYU game. If BYU can hit some shots from outside, they had a good chance to beat Kansas, and they did, in fact, beat Kansas at the Fog. Baylor kind of followed it up with the same recipe at home, just hit a bunch of threes, and that makes it tough on Kansas. I don't know if Houston can do that. We know this is not a very good shooting team, but so that's kind of where my hope is for Kansas. Again, I'm probably not going to be involved with them, and I'll probably will fade them in the first half. But it just does feel like a really disrespectful number to say, yeah, Houston's favored by double digits over the Kansas Jayhawks. I can't picture it. But all right, last game. Let's go to Sunday, and we've got a Big Ten game between Illinois and Iowa. And Illinois is on the road. We're going to project Illinois as a 2-point road favorite, and Illinois just, I've said it for a while now, I think this is clearly the second best team in the Big Ten, especially given kind of the fall of Wisconsin, and I am not a believer at all in Michigan State, despite what the analytics say, that they're like a top 20 team in the country. I'm not even close to that with Michigan State. So I think Illinois is the best team or second best team in the Big Ten, but they lose by 6 at home to Purdue. So it tells you there's a pretty big gap between them and the top team. And Iowa, which is kind of a team that I'd written off and forgotten about, they've played well lately. They've won 4 of their last 5. The one loss, though, was to this Illinois team. And It was a predictable, and I say predictable sarcastically, because Coleman Hawkins is either the best player on the floor or he sucks. And this was predictably a great Coleman Hawkins game where he put up 30 points and had 5 steals to just take over the game. I don't know how often that's going to happen. I don't know how often that we're going to get a solid but unspectacular game out of Terrence Shannon, and they're still going to get the job done, particularly, you know, when you talk about them going on the road. And I said in the Purdue game, I said Terrence Shannon didn't play in that first game. He's got to be the difference. Terrence Shannon was the worst player on the floor, it felt like, in that Purdue-Illinois game. He was dreadful. And if he'd given them anything, they could have won that game. So I assume he's ripe for a bounce back, but I don't know where Illinois's, you know, where the motivation lies right now. Are they just kind of riding their way into the tournament now that they lost this game to Purdue? What do you think of Illinois? What do you think of the Big Ten in general? And do you think Iowa is a team that is actually legit? Like, are we looking at Iowa as a team that can make some noise in the conference tournament? I know a lot of people have them on, you know, on the bubble. Do we think Iowa can make a run deep enough? And I guess this win would really go a long way for that. Can they make a deep enough run in the tournament to get them off of the bubble and into the tournament?
So I think this would be Iowa's biggest win of the season, even though it's at home. I mean, they do have a nice win on a neutral over Seton Hall, which might help them in that bubble discussion. But apparently the committee doesn't go team versus team who beat who. It's just strictly down the line. It's probably hard to do and keep it all straight.
They won. They did win at Michigan State, which, again, I'm not crazy about, but analytics love them. So that a road win at Michigan State is probably going to rank pretty high for them.
Yeah. I think both quad ones, to say the least. I was against Iowa on Saturday with Northwestern. Honestly, pretty incredible. If I could get Northwestern laying less than a possession and they make 50% of their threes, I feel like that's a pretty good bet. But Iowa on the road made 50%, and I thought was way more dynamic and way more athletic, all those sort of things. It helped that Northwestern was really down a bunch of players. But I've had to take notice to Iowa playing really well. They've always been a sketchy road team. A 10-point loss at Illinois doesn't look so bad to me. Looks like it was very close with the average score metric that Bartorvik throws out there. So to me, I feel like that's a good sign that they can hang with Illinois. I don't necessarily think that Illinois is going to look past this game. I imagine they've probably got some motivation after having a huge potential opportunity to climb a seed line, I would suspect, from beating Purdue at home and it not happening. But I think my questions really is just Iowa's backcourt. They don't seem very athletic, to say the least. I mean, Tony Perkins certainly is, but beyond him, I just don't really know what they do. They've got kind of like the stretch long players that are like perimeter shooters. Brock Harding looks like a child out there as well. And I feel like that would be a very bad matchup with the angry TJ Shannon. Plus I'm worried about potentially the Domask like booty ball, as they called it, with Penn State and Saunders, whatever the guy's name was there last year. I can't believe I've already forgotten it, but I guess they haven't made me money in a while. So there we go. But it's just at this point, I think Iowa's really talented, and they got this really nice thing where they didn't play this week at all. So they basically had a bye week, have 8 days between their win at Northwestern, the return from Evanston, Chicago. I'm sure that was an easy flight back to Iowa City. And Illinois went and really put out an entire huge effort, had a huge crowd support, fan base, all that sort of stuff for a big visit of Purdue. So I feel like it puts Iowa in a very good spot. Not that Illinois is in a bad one, but I think Iowa's in a much better one. Plus with the motivation on the line, and I think we've all talked about this entire season how Illinois can look so good at times, but also can look very lost at others. Certainly Illinois can win this game. Wouldn't shock me at all, but give me the Hawkeyes, especially as a slight underdog.
Yeah, I think I lean that way too. So probably a no play for me again, just given I question Illinois' motivation here. And I know if they play their ass off, I think they're way better than Iowa. But Iowa certainly has motivation, like I said, sitting there on the bubble. All right, before we get to best bets, Griffin, let's tell the people how they can save some money at pregame.com.
Yeah, use the promo code RIVAL20, good for 20% off anything at the pregame.com website. So go on there, grab my soccer stuff, AJ's UFCs, I'm sure is coming out. Plus, it's March Madness. It's literally March. It's the time of the year to go get our packages. Literally, you get all the way through the Final Four. I think I was a $1 capper today, so I guess you could have saved 20 cents today, but you missed out on that start. Sorry for everyone. But instead, save 20% and save some real money on that end of season package. You get everything we release as soon as we have it, and I think that's the way I would play it if I were you. Get the best bang for your buck. Save as 20% as on the biggest package you can is the highest savings. It's good for 7 days from this podcast release, but if you're waiting until the 15th of March, you've already missed like the good half and first half of all these conference tournaments. We've got conference tournaments going on now. I know AJ is about to release a best bet on this podcast from one of those events, but go jump in there, use the promo code RIVAL20, and I think our bosses will look fondly on the College Basketball Podcast because you use this code. So RIVAL20, good for 20% off anything at the pregame.com website.
All right, Griffin, do you want to go first or you want me to go first? I'm good either way.
You can lead us because that's basically brought us to the promised land so far. So we're now 34-27-2 with one your best bet pending tonight, UC San Diego. That's a 55.7% clip, and we're basically putting these plays out at least 1 day, 2 days. Because we do Thursday nights for Saturday games usually. So that's like 2 days ahead of time. We're giving you plenty of our listeners, we should all be happy. It's 4.3 units so far this season if you're using the strict or the standard 1.1 to win one type of juice. So we've been good, and I think you've been leading us off that way. So why mess with it? If UH first half ain't broke, don't fix it.
Well, that's not where I'm going to go. That was a bonus play, Griffin. I'm going to go with the Roos, the Kangaroos of UMKC. In the Summit League, we've got a first-round matchup here with Denver. And UMKC has quietly really turned an ugly season upside down. Like, they did not look like they had anything going for them in the pre-conference season. I mean, they were just cannon fodder for Baylor, Colorado State, Kansas. Like, they just weren't even looking like they were going to be competitive at all. And even to teams like East Tennessee State and Bowling Green, they weren't looking good against that level of competition. But they've really kind of turned things around in conference play. They're now sitting at 10-6 in conference. They've won six straight conference games. They haven't lost in over a calendar month. And they are going to be a 4-point favorite here on a neutral. They're playing in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Not at the Pentagon. They're playing at like a convention center or something there in Sioux Falls. But they're playing against Denver. And while Denver is, like you mentioned before the pod, they're getting a little bit of love in the market. I'm not really sure why. They haven't been ultra competitive in games. They're sitting at 6-10 in conference. They've lost 8 of the last 10. It's not been all that competitive. And in that 8 of the last 10, they've played UMKC twice, a 14-point loss at UMKC and a 15-point loss at home to UMKC. I think this is the team with the momentum that feels like maybe in a wide open Summit League where South Dakota State's not the juggernaut that they've been in the past. North Dakota State doesn't seem like they're a killer team any either. Like this, and Oral Roberts, I should mention, who's no Max Asmus, no more Oral Roberts dominance in this league either. So I think UMKC feels like they've got a legit chance to win this tournament, to win a bid here. And I don't think Denver can possibly feel that way. So I think you've got a team that's playing well right now against a team that they've already dominated multiple times this season. And the way that they've dominated them, it feels repeatable because in the win at UMKC, they only made 4 threes. So it's not like they were super 3-point reliant at home or something like that. Denver out rebounded them in that game. What it boiled down to is UMKC can take care of the ball. Denver cannot take care of the ball. And if you turn the ball over 18, 20 times a game, you end up being what Denver is, just a bad team. So I'm going to go with UMKC, the Roos, -4 against Denver in the Summit League tournament.
Yeah, I'm with you, AJ. I feel like Denver, I mean, as I mentioned, they've been getting some respect this year. But if they lose here, they clinch their third straight losing season under Jeff Wilbrun. And ultimately, they're 2 spots behind last year's Denver team, all in the high 200s. So in Jeff Wilbrun's tenure. So I don't see that changing. I do miss the days. I long for the days of Grant Nelson being an undiscovered North Dakota State Bison player. But now he's at Alabama, and unfortunately, I can never seem to bet that team. So never works for me very well in that scenario, but I'm glad to hear some Summit love. For my best bet, I'm going to stay in a very familiar place, a conference that we just talked about. I'm going to stay with that ACC, and I'm going to go to Wake Forest. There are three. AJ's projecting a 4-point favorite. Looks like we're kind of between that number 3 and 4. Played up to 4, but ultimately a small home favorite. I think even if the line's higher than that, I'm still into Wake Forest, potentially switching over what's been a really bad run to finish the season. I think feeling a lot of the pressure coming down the stretch of trying to get that NCAA tournament bid, first one to receive Forbes at Wake Forest, if I remember correctly. Maybe he was in a first 4, but he's been going off on the net for weeks now, and I think even targeting our guy, Joe Lunardi, maybe not our guy, but targeting Joe Lunardi as well as the face of the net, even though he's not even related to it. But I think Clemson, as we've talked about already, they seem to have a pretty weak but fairly established brand that's getting in the NCAA tournament. I think Clemson has problems on the road. Wake Forest performs a lot better at home. They shoot threes a lot better there. And I think this is a huge win for the program that puts them in a really good position to go in the ACC tournament, get a couple wins, and clinch their out of conference or their at-large bid.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think them, and if anybody saw the game on Tuesday with Wake and Georgia Tech, basically Georgia Tech got away with like the most blatant travel in the history of time, and that's how Wake Forest lost by one, and it literally could be a loss that cripples their NCAA hopes. If they're going to have any, you can't afford to lose to Clemson at home. Like I said, this is one of the only teams in the ACC that's for sure in the tournament. So this is a must win for Wake. I tend to agree. I think Wake's got to win multiple games in the conference tournament to have much of a shot here. But yeah, I think they're the motivated team. You're right. Steve Forbes has not been to an NCAA tournament since his days at, what was it, East Tennessee. It's
Johnson City represent.
Yeah, it's been a while. So I know they were a team that looked like they were there a couple weeks ago. And I think there's a couple losses that are going to haunt them. And it was that loss at Virginia that they barely got beat. And then I think that loss to Georgia Tech, those are the ones that they're going to look back on and go, damn, that was a difference in our season. But I do think this Clemson game is very winnable for them. So I fully back and support your best bet.
Let's
and I think we're going for another 2-0, friend. All right. Let's we our schedule is TBD for conference tournaments. We'll once the brackets are set, we'll figure something out and see if we can jump on. I think Sunday we should be good. We should know what all the big tournaments are, and it may not be a show like this where we're going game by game, but more of a show where we kind of talk about who we like in each conference and what we think is going to shake out, maybe give you a dark horse for each conference and do it that way. So but doing these games like this has been fun all season long, Griffin. I appreciate you. And like I said, it's been a good season. That always makes it better.
I mean, we've been making the people money, AJ, before you sign us off. We've been making people money, and maybe we need to do a show of art. I don't know if you're Michelangelo or I'm Da Vinci. I'm not sure, but, you know, it'd be good for the brand going forward.
Yeah. Like Ninja Turtles, are you talking about?
I think that one did the, like, that chapel, not in Chapel Hill. I think it was Sistine, maybe.
Gotcha.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the Ninja Turtle work. I want to be the guy with the nunchucks is my hope. All right, Griffin, thank you, man. Thanks to the audience. Thank you guys for listening. And hopefully we'll be back here on Sunday talking about some winners, and you guys will be fat and happy with loads of cash in your pocket. You guys take care. Talk to you on Sunday.